Parshas Bishalach starts off as the following. It says, "Vayi Bishalach Paro is the Am." When Paro sent out the people, "V'lo Nacham Elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim," God wouldn't allow them to go by the ways of the Plishtim. If you check out Mitzrayim and you look at a map and you see how to get into Eretz Yisrael, I have a little map over here. I drew it last night. It's not a very good one. But if you check out, the normal way of getting from the Nile into Eretz Yisrael would be straight up through the Plishtim, through not what we call nowadays Palestine. That never existed. Plishtim are Philistines or a different type of a nation, but the area that is known as Gaza, which was owned by the Plishtim back then, that area which is always a big question whether it has the status of Eretz Yisrael or not, that land, Lo Nacham Elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim, wouldn't let them go the easy route, Kikarofu, because it was too close to where they were. Ki Amar Elokim, because God was afraid. Peni Nachema Am Berosa Mochama. Maybe the people will console themselves, they'll be upset when they see a war, Vishavu Mitzrayim, they're going to go right back to Egypt. They're going to return right back to Egypt. So, what war were they going to see? What were they going to do? They're going to fight the Plishtim? What's the big deal in fighting the Plishtim? So the Yonas ibn Uzziel brings down this Medrash that we mentioned before. Mentioned the Medrash Rabbah in Perek Chof. Mentioned Pirkei Dei Rabbi Eliezer in Perek Mem Ches. It's mentioned by the Mechilta. And it's mentioned in other places that apparently there was a war from Bnei Ephraim. Bnei Ephraim were citizens of Mitzrayim. They lived as citizens in Egypt. They were always citizens. They were Yosef's kids. They had regular citizenship. And they were allowed, unlike any other people, any other Jews that were in Eretz Mitzrayim, they were allowed to leave at any time. They were allowed to get up and leave. The Meshech Chachma says, Bnei Ephraim never worked. They never had the Avoda in Mitzrayim. They never had any of the Avoda. So when they wanted to get up and leave, they could just get up and leave. So they got up, they went out of Mitzrayim, and they left. They left. They had a false Navi. They had a false prophet by the name of Yignon. Yignon was this guy who was in charge. He was a false Navi, and he got up and he said, "It's time for us to go. I got a message from God. It's time for us to go." Some say that Ephraim was still alive. The great-great-grandfather Ephraim was still alive. He was there. And he convinced 200 to 300,000 of his fellow Ephraimite people to leave Mitzrayim. How are there so many people? Remember, four-fifths of them died during Choshech. So there were a ton of people that died. These were the people that didn't die yet during Choshech. There were 200 to 300,000 people from Ephraim that listened to Yignon and left Mitzrayim. They all ran out of Mitzrayim. Says Yonas ben Uzziel, as they left, the Plishtim saw them. The Plishtim saw them and said, "What are you guys doing here? What are you guys doing here?" They came down to go fight them. Ephraim went up against them, but because they weren't learning in the ways of war, they had no idea what to do when it came to a war, when it came to a battle. They didn't know what to do. They tried fighting them. Nothing happened. They lost, destroyed. Absolutely destroyed. Their bones were piled up in the desert by the Plishtim. The Plishtim piled their bones up into two massive mounds of bones in the middle of the desert to show the Jews what'll happen if they try to take over Eretz Canaan. What'll happen if they try to take it over? Now, they knew about this. They knew that was happening, but they didn't really think if they weren't going to see it, it didn't really affect them that much. That was 30 years ago. Now we got Moshe, now we got this. But if they went that path and they would have seen the bones of Ephraim, 200,000 to 300,000 people, their bones sticking up like that, there's no way they would have been able to go through. They said there's no way. They're going to look at it and they're going to be like, "Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't help these people, how is he going to help us? How do we know this?" They're not going to think, "Well, that was a false prophet, this is a true prophet." They're not going to think that way. They're all of a sudden they're going to lose their morale. They're not going to be able to go through with it, and they're going to go down. They're going to go down. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Sadi Beis Mabeis says these bones were the bones that were that had Tchias HaMesim from Yechezkel. Yechezkel went to resuscitate, to bring back the dead. We don't know who he came back. This is from Yechezkel. Sanhedrin Sadi Beis Mabeis. Yechezkel went to bring back the dead. Those dead came up to Nebuchadnezzar and slapped them in the face. He asked who they were. They said, "Oh, it's the dead from Ephraim." They brought them all back. It was supposed to be these bones over here. It's a question whether these people lived after that. If they went to Eretz Mitzrayim, if they went to Eretz Yisrael and lived there afterward, there is an opinion in the Gemara where one person gets up, one of the Rabbanim got up and said, "I come from that family, and I have tefillin from them. I have tefillin from those people from the Bnei Ephraim." An unbelievable little thing over there. But they did. They were supposed to be there. The Marzav says that we're missing something. It was two times. It happened at two different points in time. One was during the times of Amram, when Ephraim was still alive, and one happened 30 years before they left. And there was a second time when that happened. One happened that they were killed by the Mitzrayim. One happened that they were killed by the Plishtim. But there are two different things that happened over here. But it was a massive, massive, massive mistake. A huge, huge mistake. The Radal says that they got this onish because of one reason. What did Yosef say to them before they left? before he died, I should say.
Take my bills.
And we say it right here in the beginning of the parsha. It says that right before it said, where is it? It says straight out, Vayikach Moshe has Atmos Yosef Imo. Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him. Ki Ashbeish Bias Bnei Yisrael, because he had sworn to Bnei Yisrael. He made Bnei Yisrael swear to him, saying, Pakodiv Goro Lokim Eschem, Valis Natosami Zaitchem. Hashem will remember you, and he'll bring out my bones. You should bring out my bones with you when you leave Mitzrayim. Bnei Ephraim didn't do it. Bnei Ephraim didn't do it. Says Rabbi Ephraim and says others that the pshat on why Bnei Ephraim got killed is because they never followed that shvua. They swore that they would take out the bones of Ephraim and they weren't able to do it. But the Be'er Basada says that Yosef made sure it wouldn't happen. Yosef made sure that he'd be buried in the Nile of Mitzrayim, in the Nile River. Make sure that his bones were going to be put there. We know later on when Moshe Rabbeinu pulled them out, they'd have to go to Serach Bas Asher, and he said to Serach, where's Moshe? Where's his bones? What happened? They had to pull out. She said, I'm telling you, he was buried right here in the middle of the Nile River, but nobody ever knew why. Nobody could figure out why Yosef didn't want to be buried anywhere else. Why wouldn't he be buried anywhere inside the Kavernit Shel Malachim, inside the place where the Malachim are buried? Why would it be inside the Nile River? Moshe Rabbeinu had to take out a little gold thing, put Ali Shur on it, threw it down in the river, and up came the coffin of Yosef Atzadik. But why do you have to put himself in there in the first place? Why hide yourself? Why do you have to be inside the water? Unbelievable answer. Unbelievable answer is, he knew what Bnei Ephraim were going to do. He knew that his great-great-grandchildren were going to try to leave Mitzrayim early. And he didn't want to go with them. But he knew that they weren't going to leave without him. So what he did was, he purposely hid himself inside the Nile River. Bnei Ephraim did look for him. They went all over looking for him. And they should have realized from the fact that they couldn't find Yosef that they're not supposed to leave. But Yignon couldn't take it anymore. Yignon said, I have a prophecy from God that we're not supposed to take Yosef anymore. We're supposed to leave Yosef in Mitzrayim, and he's supposed to come up with the rest of Bnei Yisrael. But by ourselves, we're supposed to go up by ourselves and be there first. Because Yignon really wanted to leave. He wanted to get out of there. He didn't want to be in Mitzrayim anymore. So they left, thinking that Yignon was a true prophet, and it was all a lie. And that's when they all got killed. Every single one of them got killed. That's the pshat behind it. Says the Al Gruveni, that's why Yosef said, Pakod Yifgod Elokim Eschem. A double Lushan. Pakod Yifgod. You should remember me when you bring me out of Mitzrayim. Because the first time, don't bring me out. When Bnei Ephraim go out, don't bring me out. The second time, when you leave with everybody, that's when you should bring me out. That's the pshat behind the puzzle. That's why he says it a second time. Now, Paro got himself all ready, right? It's machlokas exactly how he went to fight, but he definitely had a massive advantage. There's machlokas if he had 3 mitzriim for every Jew, 30 mitzriim for every Jew, or 300 mitzriim for every Jew. Question of how there were so many mitzriim that were alive. Definitely 600,000 Jews between the age of 20 and 60 were male. There's probably 3 million Jews altogether. You have 300 times 3 million. That means you have 900 million Egyptians at the Kriyas Yamsuf, aside from all the people that are there in Mitzrayim. So how to understand the type of a midrash, I guess maybe we could use the Rav Schwab that we had from last week. Maybe you could use the Rav Schwab that we had from last week. But he saw Bnei Yisrael encamping by a very strange place. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, David o Bnei Yisrael yashuvu v'yachnu lifnei piachiros b'min to olbein ayam lifnei Baal Tzifon nicho sachanu al ayam by Baal Tzifon. Baal Tzifon. It's the last Avodah Zarah that lasted throughout all the Makos of Mitzrayim. Every Avodah Zarah was destroyed by every Makah that Hashem had in Mitzrayim. Whether it was the sheep, it was the river, idols themselves, the Bechors were considered Avodah Zarah, Paro was considered Avodah Zarah. Every single one was knocked down except for Baal Tzifon. And now all of a sudden Bnei Yisrael camps by Baal Tzifon. What's going on? And what's the power of Baal Tzifon? Baal Tzifon was a certain idol that had the picture of a huge dog on it. It was made of massive amounts of gold. It was the god of riches and wealth. And whenever you gave a sacrifice to it, you were supposed to become extremely wealthy right afterward. It also had the power to confuse anyone who tried finding it if they weren't looking for it with the right mindset. How it had that ability, who knows? The Satan had tremendous powers back then. But if you tried going around the desert, it made everybody get lost. That's why no slaves were ever able to leave Mitzrayim, because they put Baal Tzifon in such a place that when you tried leaving Egypt, you couldn't get out. You just got confused by Baal Tzifon and kept walking in circles until the Mitzrayim were able to find you and kill you. So they thought the people are lost. Sagara Leham Amidbar. All of a sudden they're getting lost. They have no way out. Paro all of a sudden is saying to himself, they're following Baal Tzifon and they're not doing it in the right way. Now we have a chance to get them back. And not only that, Baal Tzifon was our God first. So the first thing that Paro did is he grabbed all the riches of Mitzrayim. Grabbed all the riches, because the one thing you got to do for Baal Tzifon is get as many riches as you can to bring it there so that you become even richer. That's why Bnei Yisrael might have wanted to borrow the gold and the silver, thought Paro. Because because they're wanting to borrow, because they're going to Baal's phone. That's why they wanted all this stuff. That's why they wanted to grab all this stuff. That makes a lot of sense now. They wanted to sacrifice for 3 days in the desert. They were going to Baal's phone. They're trying to get it, but now they're lost because they're not doing it the right way. Said Paro, I'm going to get them. Now I'm going to be able to destroy them. So he went out with that koach to be able to get all of Bnei Yisrael with that gold. The Be'er Basada points out, is a question exactly what he brought with them to this war. Did he want to fight naturally, or did he want to fight supernaturally? According to the Be'er Basada, there's a weird pasuk over here. It says, after they were told that they're going there, it says, Vayesor es richbo ves amalok achimo. He gathered together his chariot, or tied up his chariot, and he brought his people with him. Now, what does that mean? Literally, I mean, it's okay, he was still ready to go. He got his chariot ready, he got his people ready, he got everyone, and he's like, let's go! And he got everyone ready. But there's more to it. Richbo refers to also your chariot in Shemayim. Every people, every nation down below has a malach up there in Shemayim. Mitzrayim had a very, very powerful malach. Question what his name is, if it's Rahav or Uzzah or Mitzrayim or even Ophan, is a question of what the name of the malach of Mitzrayim is, but they had a very, very powerful angel, an angel that was in charge up there in Shemayim. What he did was, he made sure, according to the Be'er Basada, he made sure he wouldn't fight. But he tied up his chariots and he said, don't go with me. He took his people so he could naturally fight. He didn't want to rely on any supernatural things anymore. He thought Baal's phone is what was punishing me up until now. I don't want to rely on any other gods. I'm just going with Baal's phone and just with my people. Nothing else there. That's what we wanted to go in. But others say no. It says, by Yosar is Ofen Markvosav, later on in Pasuk Chafei, Perkidal Pasuk Chafei. Other people say Ofen stands for the Galgalim. He brought with them the craziest amount of magics within his own chariot. I don't know if that's a steer or it's adding on, whatever, but he brought in with his own chariot crazy amounts of magic. Everything that you could possibly think of, he brought with him to be able to get every single one of the stars on his side. All the mazos, all the constellations to be on his side. Especially Madin. Mars, they call it. Mars to be on his side. Madin is supposed to be the Malach of war and bloodshed and everything like that. He tried getting Madin on his side in order to go fight against Bnei Yisrael. Tehadat HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed the Ofen. Removed everything. Stopped the sun in the middle of the sky and didn't allow the magics to work. Didn't allow the magics to work, because as long as the world's not running in this natural way, there's no way for those magics to work. That's what he was doing. Now in that case, as Paro Hikri, if that's everything like that, we're going to stop with that. By the way, Ofen is also the Gemasher of Sam, the Sultan himself, Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. You're not supposed to say his full name. That's also 131 is the Gemasher of Ofen, Aleph Pei Nun. You're missing on the Vav. There's no Vav in the Pasuk. That's what he was doing with over there. However, let's go into the Makos. Into the Makos that happened at Kriyas Yamsu. I got 50 miracles. I got 50 miracles altogether. I've said them for the past 6 years. I found them in the Miyam Loes. It is the most awesome thing you've ever seen before in your life, these 50 miracles. I took them out of order, the Miyam Loes, and put it in an order that I like better, only because I felt that it would be easier to understand. Altogether, I have 18 miracles that happened to Bnei Yisrael, 20 miracles that happened to the Egyptians, and then 12 miracles that happened in the aftermath. If you add those up together, it equals up to 50. I know this is hard math, but 18 plus 20 plus 12 is going to end up being 50. You ready? I'm going to go quick, though. So I'm going to tell you, don't even attempt to try writing this down. Ready? Number one, the Anani HaKavod went all around them. The Anani HaKavod with the clouds that were all around them was moving escalators. They went 120 mil in one night. They were moving escalators. They were able to walk with them. You didn't have to walk. It brought you wherever you wanted to go, and that's why they were even able to travel on Shabbos. It was no problem. Nobody was able to see into the clouds, but they were able to see outside of the clouds. There's a question, the Bas Ayin says, is a question whether they were able to see the clouds all together. It might have made them completely invisible, so that people wouldn't even know that they were there in the desert. Number two, Paro's army ran after Bnei Yisrael for 2 days straight without getting tired whatsoever. Nobody got tired, nobody got sick, nothing. Their entire army could have consisted of millions of people. Nobody got sick, nobody got tired at all. Number three, the cloud that went behind Bnei Yisrael to protect them from the Mitzrayim became solid as a rock. So it became like so if you touch it, it was very hard like this. But it became bouncy. So if you threw something up against it, it bounced right back. It bounced right back. Number four, spears were thrown at a ratio of 300-1 against Bnei Yisrael. Not only did not one of the spears hit, but every single one of the spears ended up hitting one of the Mitzrayim backward. It wouldn't hit them themselves, it would hit one of their friends. So every time he hit through one spear, it would hit their friend in the arm, so he wouldn't get killed. It would hit him in the leg, so he wouldn't get killed. It hit him in the ear, or get him somewhere, so he wouldn't be killed. Each one was went back and nailed others. So obviously they stopped throwing spears after a while. Number five, the bottom of the sea, this is in the morning, dried up with the wind. There was a huge wind that went under the sea that dried up the bottom of the sea. After that, the sea split. After that, the sea split. So the bottom dried out first, and then the sea split in front of Bnei Yisrael. and then it became solid walls on each side of where they were going into. Number six, 300 miles high into the air is how far the waters went. 300 miles high, so that everybody in the world would be able to see and be able to ask Bilam, which the Midrashim say they did, what in the world is going on over here? Number seven, it split into 12 equal splits. 12 equal splits, so that each one of Bnei Yisrael would be able to go, and it went widthwise. It did not go straight across like we think. You went straight across. It went in a semicircle all the way around. A semicircle all the way around. Why? Because the whole point was just to get the Mitzrayim. They didn't have to get to any other side of the river. They didn't have to get to the other side of the Yam Suf. It's not like the chicken who had to get across the road. You didn't have to get there. All they had to do was to drown the Mitzrayim. So why do you drown the Mitzrayim? You drown the Mitzrayim by getting them inside. So it went as a semicircle all the way around, and it went like that. The Rambam says that in Pirkei Avos and Parakeh. The Ibn Ezra says that in this week's Parsha. There's an Or Chaim that says it. There is a Chizkuni that says it. And the Tosos and Erchin, Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. Tosos and Erchin, Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph. That's a Gemara, by the way. Erchin is the one that nobody really knows. They think it's Erevin. It's not. It's Erchin. Either way, that's that. Number eight, water throughout the world splits. Anybody who's drinking something, it split right in half. Some say it's a 12 splits itself, which is even more annoying, so that when you're drinking, it didn't just go that way. It went all over until you could see like little stripes going down their back, right down their stomachs and everything. And also, if something was in the middle of the split, for example, like a boat or fish, it would split right in half, but it would still be fine. It would be as if it was together, just completely split from one another. Fish, you'd be able to see one fish going this way, one fish going that way, with the insides of the fish showing in the inside of the sea itself. That was mentioned. Number nine. It became an oil up on top, so they wouldn't be hit by the sun, because the sun was beating down upon them. It became like a water ohel on top that covered up on top of an Israel, so they'd be able to be in the shade, so they wouldn't have to worry about anything. But it was still light inside. The light still shone as if it was right out in the sunlight. It just wasn't as hot. Number 10, the sides became clear like windows to be able to talk to the Shvatim on the other side, and there were jewels up on the walls as well as pictures. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forget about the pictures. I can't tell you what kind of pictures they were. Da Vinci's, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. But they probably look nice. They probably look nice. Number 11, the floors were dirt, then they turned into marble, then they became mosaic floors with little tiles on the floor with little pictures on top of the tiles. Number 12, grass popped out for the animals to eat wherever the animals were going. Grass popped out from these tiles / the floor, popped out from everywhere. Number 13, fountains of sweet water came from the Yam Suf, which is salt water, and started being able to be drunk by Bnei Yisrael. Similar, number 14, the water stayed for others if they wanted it, or it went right back into the sea when they were done with it. Number 15, kids cried, fruit trees popped out of the ground in the middle of the Yam Suf. They popped out of the ground, and there was the smell of Gan Eden from those fruit trees, and they could hear certain things singing. It wasn't the Malachim, we know that, but something was singing. Number 16, there were no hills or ditches. If you go to the bottom of the sea, you're going to see lots of hills and ditches and everything. It wasn't like that. It was a straight path all the way through. They didn't even have to go down so far. The land came up to greet them, said it was one straight path for them to be able to walk on. Number 17, it was an unbelievably loud noise when the sea split, but not one Jewish woman miscarried, but every single one of the Erev Rav women miscarried. And it was very quiet once they went inside the sea. Again, we were hearing singing. They were singing all over. Number 18, even though it's a semicircle, everyone came out at the exact same time. Everyone came out at the exact same time. Even though there are older people, there are little babies, there are women walking with little babies, they all walk the exact same speed to be able to get out of it at the same time. And even though in a semicircle, the guy in the lowest semicircle versus the guy out there, there's no way. These guys at Kfitzus HaDerech in the middle of the sea to be able to go this, skip this, and end up being there, so they'd all be able to come out at the exact same time. That's all that we have for Bnei Yisrael. Now for the Mitzrayim. Number 19, all 10 Makos came back to the Mitzrayim backward. They came backward. Hoshech came first, then came Arba, then came everything else backward. It happened in the opposite way. It's a question of how Makos Bechoros happened. Makos Bechoros might not have happened in the Yam Suf. Number 20, the Mitzrayim came in even as Bnei Yisrael was still inside, and the Yam started to go down while the Mitzrayim were in, and while Bnei Yisrael were in, it started to capsize, but didn't hit any of Bnei Yisrael. Number 21, they ran in willingly, not caring about the fact, says the Ramban, this is the biggest nace of all time. They went in. They saw that this unbelievable miracle was happening. And like, we're going in. We're going in after them. Stay out. Especially if you see a semicircle, you see them coming out on that side, you think the first thing is, they're coming out over there. Why don't we, let's just walk down 20 feet. We'll get them right over there. You think that, but they went inside. They followed Bnei Yisrael inside. Number 22, it became thick mud and everyone got stuck wherever they were. Number 23, it burned the horses' hooves off. It became very, very hot till it came to the point where it was burning people's feet and the horses' hooves off. Number 24, the mud hardened, and as soon as they fell fell down on top of it, it became hard as a rock, and they fell down as if it was on top of rock. Number 25, when they fell, it wasn't like they fell off a horse. It was like they fell off a huge tower, fell down, after like falling from the Sears Tower, going down. So when they fell, it was like, you know, like hitting the ground after like 20, 25 stories. Number 26, the horses ran straight into the waves, thinking that there were female horses within the waves themselves. Number 27, the Mitzrayim and the horses ran faster now than they had ever run before. Number 28, one wheel, just one, fell off of every chariot, said the chariot would be dragging around and pushing the Mitzrayim all over the place. Number 29, ash and arrows rained down on them from open air in the sky. The whole cloud went down and there was the sun beating down and other things happened as well. Number 30, the same wind that blew it up melted the waters down. Number 31, unlike snow or ice, it melted immediately and came down crashing down immediately. 32, there were three different ways of drowning. Everybody knows that. Some drowned like feathers, some drowned like wood, just like straw, I'm sorry. Some drowned like straw, some drowned like wood, some drowned like metal or rocks or whatever it is. They, you know, it depended. Some people were going up and down, some people up and down, some people just sunk down to the bottom of the sea. Number 33, the Yam chased them. Yochanan and Mamre were tremendous magicians. They flew out of the sea and started flying up in the air. From the Yam came a massive hand. The hand came, grabbed the magicians up in the air, threw them back down into the sea. That was a massive hand that came outside. Number 34, the Yam spit out the horse and rider into the air, and they fell down backward. Rider first, horse next, so that the guy would feel the pain of number one, belly flop. Number one, a belly flop. And then afterward, have a horse go down on top of you, which I guess hurts. 35, the horses stuck to the chariots and couldn't swim away, even though horses are good swimmers, because all the gold was on them, and Hashem wanted them to have the gold. Number 36, some of them were spit all the way up to the Mayim El Yonim, all the way up to Shemayim into space. They were stripped of their clothing, burned, and then afterward blinded by some type of smoke, and then thrown right back down. Number 37, they bounced up from the depths when they hit the ground as if it was a bouncy ball, went right back up. Went down, bounced right back up. Number 38, some were swallowed up by the seafloor. The sand covered them and choked them. Now, that's it for the Mitzrayim. 39, now is the aftermath. No Mitzrayim had yet died. Not one Mitzray had died yet. Not one died. So that B'nai Israel could see them on the banks of the river, see who their captors were, and then kill them themselves. They didn't have to kill them themselves, but they could if they wanted to kill the Mitzrayim themselves. Number 40, the land of Mitzrayim was lifted up into the air to see everything that was going on at Kriyas Yamsuf. Parts of Mitzrayim burned, parts of Mitzrayim were drowned as Mitzrayim was lifted up into the air. Number 41, the Mitzrayim were all spat onto the shore, including the Malach of Mitzrayim himself. They saw the Malach of Mitzrayim sitting on top of the seafloor, on the banks of the sea. Number 42, those that were swallowed by the ground went underneath the ground to where they were and popped out of the ground like little flowers and came out of the ground like that. Number 43, the ground buried them all to give them all a burial, some of them while they were still alive, for the schus of burying Yaakov Avinu. Number 44, all gold, jewelry, and everything else was spat onto the shores, including treasures from Gan Eden that the Malachim threw into the sea. Number 45, anyone from any other nation but the Mitzrayim, any other nation that was inside the sea with the Mitzrayim chasing after Bnei Yisrael, they were thrown out of the sea and lived in order to tell everyone what had happened inside the Kriyas Yamsuf. So they all went to their respective nations and told them what happened. Number 46, Paro did Tshuva Gemura, lived outside of the sea, ended up becoming the king of Nineveh and lived for a very, very long time. Number 47, Pesel Micha, either the Pesel Micha, which means the idol that the Jews may have brought inside the Kriyas Yamsuf, Shevet Dan, either survived, even though it should have been destroyed, or was completely smashed with any Jews that were holding it. Number 48, says Vayar Yisrael to Yad HaGdola Asher Asa Hashem B'Mitzrayim, and says Ki Ga'o Ga'a. Chazal Darshan, that refers to Tchias HaMason. Yaakov Avinu came along with the Avos Olam, the Gimel Avos Olam, that's Ga'o Ga'a. The three Avos Olam came by to watch everything that was happening in Kriyas Yamsuf. Some say even the Shvatim came out of their Kvarim. Remember, they were taking the Shvatim out of Mitzrayim. They came out of their Kvarim and walked across the sea, leading their Shvatim in their respective paths. And some say that the entire Akedah came. Hara Moria with Avram Avinu and Yitzchak. Avram Avinu holding the knife, going up to Yitzchak because Yitzchak was about to be shechted. They came and they waved the B'nai Yisrael from on top of the sky as they were going through. That's number 48. 49, every single person in Bnei Yisrael were all zochah to see the Shechina and the Kisei HaKavod up in Shemayim, including all babies and little kids and animals. Number 50, everyone sang Shira. And I don't know if you've ever tried doing this, but when you don't have the lines, try singing Shira and getting every single one of the lines right. One of the lines right, even if they repeat it in front of you. So just follow after me. Everybody messes it up. You always get the mess ups. Everyone sang Shira. It was perfect. Not one person was out of tune. Leads us to that. Those are the 50 miracles that happened. Miriam sang Shira after it was all over. How is that, Mutter? Isn't it Kolisha? We know there's a Gemara in Brachos of Daf Chav Dalid. It says Kol B'Yisha Erva. A woman singing is an Erva. It's like looking at her hair. It's like looking at a woman's leg. It's on the same category. So why in the world do we say that Miriam was able to sing Shira? What was different about this that she was able to sing Shira? So there's a lot of answers. I have 10 answers altogether. I don't think I'm going to go through all of them right now. But just to give you the basic idea, some say that Kol Yishev Erva is only Asur Midrabbanan. If it's only Asur Midrabbanan, it wouldn't have been Asur yet. The only problem with that answer is, if it's a bad thing, then you don't think Miriam kept it on her own? Out of her own seichel? If Chazal saw there was a problem, she probably kept it on her own. That's number one, but that's the number one answer that's given. That's brought by the Nachal Shimon. Number two, the Be'er Sheva says, I'll be deep or shiny. Hashem told them to do it. So that's different. Once it's done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no question you got to go out and do it. Number three, Rav Yosef Engel says, she said it. Bata'an Lahem Miriam. She said back to them, let's sing Ashir Lashem Kigoga. She said it to them, but she never sang it. It wasn't a song. Okay, you should just know there's a Ritva in Makos and Yurchas Mabez that learns from Bata'an Lahem Miriam that Ana, Ta'an, is a Lashon of song because it refers to a song. So that Ritva would definitely argue with this. Number four, the Gra says, Bata'an Lahem Miriam. Lahem is masculine. Who is she answering to? She told the men to sing, according to the Gra. She said to the men, sing for us and we'll play the instruments. They started playing the guitar and the drums and everything like that, but she herself didn't sing whatsoever. Yaakov Ruveni says she told the Malachim to sing in Shemayim, because the Malachim weren't allowed to sing until Bnei Yisrael gave them permission to. She told them to go ahead and sing. That was the Malachim. That's number five. Number six, Mi'emas Shechina, there's no Hirhur. What that means is, if you have the Kisei HaKavod there, and God's there, and they're all sitting there, you think they're actually going to be thinking, wow, that girl looks pretty good. That voice is really, that's getting me to think bad thoughts. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen. You have the Shechina there, you have everything going on there. It's like in the base of Mikdash, nothing's going to happen. That's what's brought down over there. That's the answer that they give, and they say for that, Ashira LaHashem, Ashira Aleph Shin Yud Resh Hei, stands for Emas Shechinas Ka, Emas Shechinas Yod Yud Hei, Ruach HaKodesh. That's what they end up having. That's what Ashira stands for. Number seven, the Taimin Ogim brings down, they had drums, and they drowned out their voices with the drums, so that they couldn't hear anything. Number eight, the Paris Yosef says, only Miriam sang, and all the women surrounded her, so that no one could see Miriam. And they could barely hear her voice, because there were so many women surrounding Miriam, they couldn't really figure out what was going on. But only Miriam was the one who sang, and she was right in the middle of everybody. Number nine, this is kind of a hard one. It's based on a Stei Chemed. There's a concept called Trei Koli Lo Mishtami, that if you have two women singing at the same time, you won't pay attention to it, and therefore it's mutter. So you'd be allowed to go to a concert with more than one woman singing at once. It's the famous heter that's given for NCSY. It's based on a famous Shavuos HaTshuvos that's brought down, Shavuos HaTshuvos 3-day Eish. Based on that, the problem with it is that the Chassam Sofer was once asked a Shaila very similar. Chassam Sofer was asked for the king of Hungary was coming toward his town. They asked, they all want to go to Shul, and the men and the women want to sing out together, Yamim Al Yamim Melech Tosif Shno Sokumodor Vador. They wanted to sing it. Now, that's not a very flattering song, especially for a woman to sing it. It's not like the greatest sounding song. But the Chassam Sofer says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not miskabel beraton. He doesn't accept willingly anything that's said by women out loud in a song fashion in front of men. He does not accept it in a willing fashion. It's an unbelievable Chassam Sofer. The Chassan Sofer, who's the great grandson of the Chassam Sofer, has a famous hetter based on this Trei Koli Lo Mishtami, but he's very scared to do it because of his great grandfather. It's a very, very scary thing. That number nine is a very hard thing. We shouldn't go into that right now. Number 10 is that Miriam might not have been married. And the voice of a single woman may be different from the voice of an Eish Yisish. An Eish Yisish may be usher to listen to, but a Pnuya may be mutter. That same applies for a Goy. A non-Jewish woman could be the exact same thing as a single single woman. Why? Because you think there'd be more desire, right? But the isser is erba. When is a woman supposed to cover her hair? Only after she's married. Since we compare it in the Gemara to a woman who's covering her hair, it sounds like the Gemara is only talking about a married woman. I realize that's a little hard to understand. That goes into the lumdus of the sugya, and we can't explain that right now, but that's the basic idea as to where the heter came from. That's the basic idea. Alright, what bracha do we make on mon? They got the mon in this week's parsha. The mon came down from Shemayim. What bracha do you make on it? You think you got it, right? I got found four other answers. There's unbelievable answers as to what bracha they made on the mon. The mon was an unbelievable object. It's a piece of bread that came down from Shemayim that tastes like whatever you wanted it to. What kind of a bracha? How can they make berachas mazon? That's a good question also. Could they ever make a berachas mazon? Why do you say mazonos? It's power. That doesn't make it automatically mazonos. It's powerful. So therefore, you're saying that it's going to be mazon the person. It's very good.
You make a bunch of foods.
It's going to be the most powerful. It's the best one that's going to be possible. I forgot who said that, but he was... It's one of the Rebbe's, the Chernobyl Rebbe or something like that, but it was brought down. But I'm not going to say that answer, actually, because it's not brought down by any... It was brought down and then knocked out. And I can't remember what the answer was and what the reason why was, but there was one opinion that said mazonos. That's not a bad call whatsoever. The Bnei Yisachar says from the Rama Mipano, you make hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. Hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. That's the bracha you make. However, there was someone there when the Bnei Yisachar said that out loud. The Mekubal Rabbi Yisrael Dov said, no, there's no need to make a bracha on the mon. Why? Because the whole pshat in making a bracha is supposed to be your mevarer nitzotzos. You're taking the kedusha out of the food. You're making the food holy. You're making the food holy. That's why you make a bracha, to make it mine. I'm saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you gave me this holy food. Thank you so much for the holy food. It's like making the whole food holy. By the mon, it's automatically holy. You don't have to make it any holier. So no bracha is necessary. So Rabbi Yisachar Dov says there's no need to be able to make anything whatsoever. However, on Shabbat, after you make a bracha, you'd make a bracha of Asher Kiddushan v'mitosav v'tzivanu al Su'udas Shabbos. And if it was on Yom Tov, al Su'udas Yom Tov. That's the bracha you would make. But no other brachas. We don't say that because we have regular amotzis, we have alecha, we have amotzi lecha min ha'aretz, we have everything else. But then they didn't have any other brachas. So you got to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the meal. So you say, thank you for the meal. That's Asher Kiddushan v'tzivanu lakol Su'udas Shabbos. The Zohar is mashma, whatever min it tasted like, that's the bracha you would make on. If you were thinking that pizza, well then it's a big problem what you would make. How much of your... If you were thinking to have a drink, you'd make a bracha of shakel. If you're thinking to have a fruit, you'd make all eights. If you're thinking to have something else, I'm sorry? It could be a drink. Other people say the Be'er Miriam became a drink, but it could become whatever you wanted it to. Whatever you wanted it to become, it became. You wanted it to be meat, chicken, fish, it could do it. You make a shakel. That's what the Zohar is mashma. The problem with that is, that means according to the Zohar, that everything goes by taste. So what happens by bubble gum or jelly beans? We have a certain type of taste within the jelly bean. Say a chulent flavored jelly bean. There is such a thing in New York, in Queens, on Main Street. There's a certain ice cream shop that I went to that has chulent flavored ice cream. At the time, they always do it. They have like 700 different flavors. It was chulent flavored ice cream. You know what I'm talking about, Akiva? What? Mike? Yeah, that's exactly. What is it? Mike's and Minna's? Max and Minna's. That's right. That's Max and Minna's. So they have it. It's famous. A famous ice cream place. Famous ice cream place. Everybody in Queens knows it, and everybody, if you're not from New York and you don't know about it, and you say it to a New Yorker's like, such losers, they don't know what it is. But okay, whatever, they're losers. The fact is, there's this place that has this chocolate flavored ice cream. According to the way the Zohar says it, it should be you make a Brahmin and Mizonos on it. Should be a Mizonos, because the bracha goes by what the taste goes like. But okay, we don't pass it like that Zohar. It's an interesting Zohar to be able to get into. Here we go. The Igret Akala says, whatever mitzvah you want it to be, that's what bracha you make on it. You want it to be matzah, you want it to be honey, you can make it into shakel for Rosh Hashanah. You can make it into whatever you want, and you'll be able to make it that way. However, the Chidah says, no, that's not what I wanted, Brachos Mem Chesemud Beis says that Moshe made Birchas HaMazon. He made the first bracha of Birchas HaMazon in the Midbar. When? They didn't have bread. When did he make the first bracha of Birchas HaMazon? So I saw an interesting pshat. When Yisro came to the Anani HaKavod, Yisro came to bring back Zipporah and his two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, he brought bread with him. And they ate that bread, and at that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu made Birchas HaMazon. He made Birchas HaMazon. How long did they have matzah? That's a good question also. 61 sudas, but it doesn't seem it's referring to that. It seems like when they're actually in the Midbar, when they're around in the Midbar, after they maybe would have been commanded from the Torah. And there's a question when Yisrael came as well. However, it is brought down that it might be from Yisrael.
It's not past Yisrael.
That's a good call. That's a good call. Wouldn't it have been the Gzeira? Birchus Mazon wouldn't be such a problem either. Yeah, you would be able to make Birchus Mazon. Although you'd have to switch around some of the words. As long as the Olam Kulo, B'tuvo, B'chein, B'chazin, Rachamim, B'nusein Lechem, L'chol Basur, Kilo Olam Chasa. You have to like switch around some of the letters. You know, B'nusein Lechem, Le'Jews. You know, Kilo Olam Chasa. It'd have to be something like that. You have to change it around. Regardless, and they make a Kal V'chomer. If they made a Birchus Mazon, if that Birchus Mazon went down the Mun, Kol Shekin, they made a Bracha Rishona. Because we know if you make a Bracha Achrona, we know you must have made a Bracha Rishona. You have to have made a Bracha Rishona. How do we know that? The Gemara says it. It's not like one of those jokes where you say, like, we know that Yaakov didn't wear a kippah. How do we know? By Yetzei Yaakov. You think Yaakov would go anywhere without a kippah? Like, it's not one of those jokes. It's not one of those classic jokes. This is like a real thing where we're saying, if you know that Birchus Hamazon is the Bracha that you make after food, and we know you're making a Bracha after you ate it to thank God, you don't think you would make it before God? You're like, that's after you're satisfied. When you're hungry, you want to thank God before it.
That would make all
the Yes, that's the Gemara and Brachos. This is what the Gemara and Brachos is trying to do. But yeah?
That's for the food. But the second part is for being satisfied. I think you're not actually making a Brachos on the food.
That's an interesting call. So that would be an interesting call, how you would work it. I don't know. That's an interesting lump to see. You have to work through. You have to work through. But the last thing that we're going to have to go through is, we don't have that much time, and I'm a little afraid about this, but Rav Wolfson. This is our last Rav Wolfson. I'm going to have to take this in about 3 minutes. So here we go. We know that Yosef, it was the schus of Yosef, the merit of Yosef, that caused Bnei Yisrael to have the sea to split. Sea split in the merit of Yosef. It saw the bones of Yosef, and it says, Hayom ra'a vayanos. The sea saw vayanos, and it ran away. Because Yosef said, vayanos vayetzeachutza, when Eshes Potiphar tried to grab Yosef, Yosef was vayanos vayetzeachutza, he ran outside, so Hayom ra'a, the sea saw Yosef, vayanos. Mida kenegamida, it ran away from Bnei Yisrael. It flew away from Bnei Yisrael. The problem is, the Medrash Rabbah says straight out in the beginning of this parsha, in the conditions and Maisa Bereishis, on the first six days of creation, God said to the sea, "I want you to split for Bnei Yisrael when they come through." And the sea said, "Yeah, okay, fine." So the sea knew it was supposed to split. So what do you mean? It saw Yosef and it split. It knew always. It was always supposed to split. So why did it have to see Yosef to split? What made it stop and say, "No, I don't want to do it. What? What happened? Exactly. What happened that made the sea say, "You know what? I'm going to wait a little bit." You got to wait for Nachshon Ben Ami Nozav to jump in. You got to wait for Shevet Ben Yamin to jump in. Whoever it was, something happened that made the sea split, and it was because of Atzmos Yosef, the Midrash says. Why? It should have split in the first place. That's what God made for its condition in the beginning. So we know that we left Mitzrayim early, from 400 to 210, right? From 400 to 210. Hashem knew that also, and the Yam knew that also. The Yam's sitting there and it's saying, why in the world are they leaving early? They don't deserve to leave yet. So refuse to split. It's not your time yet. You're not supposed to go yet. I'm not splitting for you. God told me to split for you after 400 years. It's been 210. I'm waiting until later on. Until it saw Yosef. Yosef realized, it's too late. If I stay here any longer with Eshes Potiphar, I'm going to sin. So what did he do? He left his clothes there and he ran outside as soon as he could. Bnei Yisrael were about to be on the 50th level of Tuma. As soon as they were about to be on, they knew they had to run out of Mitzrayim as soon as they could. When the sea saw what happened to Yosef, that it ran outside, and he ran outside as soon as he saw he's about to sin, he realized that happened to Bnei Yisrael as well. So you're right, they left early. They left early. And they're going to have to make up these 190 years. When? By the Golus of Acheron, by the Golus of Edom. The 190 years are going to have to be made up later on. It will be made up later on. It will be made up later on by the Golus of Edom. And I'm going to have to split again. But I'll split now, just for a little bit. It saw Yosef and realized I have to split a little bit. And in the end, I'm going to totally split. You think 300 miles in the air is a real split? I'll show you a real split, says the sea. I'll do a real split when you're coming out in the end. In the future, lost level, when Mashiach comes, it's going to be the greatest split you've ever seen. And that, my friends, is Yachatz. Yachatz. You take the middle matzah, split it in half. You got a small piece and a big piece. What do you do with that big piece? You hide it for later on. The whole Pshat Yachatz is, well, we've seen is just that tiny little piece of matzah. That's the amount of the miracles that we've seen up until now. The split of the sea was just that. The future split, the future miracles are going to be that huge piece of matzah, that safun. Safun means hidden. We'll get it soon. We'll get it soon. It'll be at the very, very end. It'll be the last thing you have. It's going to be the afikomen. The last thing we're going to have before we go to the times of the Mashiach. That's the idea behind it. All right, guys, we'll stop with that.